Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. I have a guest that you actually have asked to have on the podcast multiple times. Today, we're going to be talking to Amanda, who has listened to every single episode of the podcast because Amanda has edited every single episode of this podcast, the other two podcasts that I had. Like, Amanda has Lisa in her ears all of the time. Amanda, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you. Yes, I have listened to every single episode you have ever recorded.
Sometimes more than once.
True.
So how did we first get connected? How did you find Organize 365?
You were looking for a podcast editor. happened to be in a shared Facebook group. And I said, hey, I can do that. And that's how we connected and how I learned about Organize 365. And that was over 7 years ago, or roughly 7 years ago.
Yeah, because I was a blogger then. And so we were in, I think, a couple of Facebook, there were a bunch of bloggers that were in a bunch of different Facebook groups. And so we were in a couple of different ones together, I think. And then I don't know if any of them had started podcasting when I started podcasting. Some of them have since. They were very good at getting traffic to their blog and making money through ads and making money through affiliate links and even brand partnerships. I was never successful at any of that stuff. And I always felt like I was failing the blogging game. And I was like, maybe I'll just go talk into a microphone somewhere, create a podcast. I'm a good talker. I can talk.
It was similar for me. My blog didn't really take off. I ended up meeting people and starting my business because of my tech skills rather than my blogging skills.
Yes. So explain, if you don't mind, like, how did you get into editing podcasts? Because podcasts were still very, very new when we started doing this back then.
Actually, I started editing podcasts about 6 years before your podcast.
Wow.
My job as a communications director at a church, it was back then when they needed someone to edit the sermon podcast and post that. And because I was communications director, they said, Amanda, figure it out. And so I went to my husband and I said, how do I do this? He has a degree in communications with an emphasis in audio production. So he taught me how to edit. And the rest is kind of history, I guess, as they say. I went from there into WordPress maintenance for bloggers and small businesses. And then eventually ran across you. And when you needed an editor, I'm like, I can add that. I know how to do that. And it grew from there.
You know what I find interesting? I don't think I've ever mentioned on the podcast before, but I mean, I go to churches. I've been to multiple different churches. My parents helped start a church up in Akron and then went to a mega church. And I go to what's considered a mega church. I've gone to small churches as well. I find that when I am back when we were in person in churches, and our church is back in person now, marketing trends tend to be in churches before they're in marketing. Is what I've noticed. Like, churches are a volunteer army. Like, if they don't stay current with the times, especially if you're a non-traditional church, like if you're a traditional church that's been around 2,000 years, then the Catholic Mass is the same over and over again. But evangelical churches tend to grow and iterate as the population grows and iterates in how they deliver their messages. So they'll change their music or they'll start to have slides on the stage. And then really, when you go from worship into the sermon, those are like commercials in the middle, basically on the screen, the commercials and the slides and the people who come on and how they add in transitions, how messages evolve. I've just, over the years, I have many times found myself on Sunday observing changes and things that are being tried in churches. And then you see them about 6 months later in mainstream media. Have you ever thought about that or thinking about it now? Have you ever observed that?
Yeah, a little bit. I think I find that they're either far ahead or they're far behind. Mm-hmm. There's not much of a middle ground.
True.
But yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so I'm an avid learner. So we would go to these churches that would tape their sermons, and then you could go out back and you could buy the cassette tapes, and then it became CDs, and then ultimately they ended up in podcasts. And so my mom and I would be in line with our $3 to get your tape or your CD. And then we would re-listen to it, and we would share the sermons or the messages with whoever we thought needed that one at that time. I find it interesting with the pandemic, some of the churches that actually were ahead of the curve and really had like a technology staff don't seem to be doing as well putting things out in podcasts or on YouTubes as other ones do. I find that fascinating because your audience moved, but they didn't necessarily, the technology they had in-house, they don't understand how it works on demand.
Yeah, it's different. It's very different.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like some have gone back like 5 years in not being able to capture that on-demand online audience. Mm-hmm. They're just waiting for the church to open back up again fully. So anyway, if you're wondering, I'm always getting business from everywhere, including from churches. But Amanda, back to you. Tell us about the people who live with you.
Well, there's me and my husband, Josh, and I have four boys. They're ages 14, 10, 7, almost ready to turn 8, and 5 years old.
That is a big family.
No pets, no extras, just four boys. That's enough.
So were you, okay, so you met me through the blogging and you started doing the podcast. And I've referred a lot of people to you as their audio engineer. So you do run other podcasts. I love that you edit podcasts that you want to listen to.
True.
Is what you've told me. Like if the content, like, because you have to listen to every episode, like you don't really have a choice. So what about the Organized 365 podcast interested you? Because I think you like listening to it. I know you've been on the organizing journey. So did you decide to get organized before you started listening to the Organized 365 podcast? Or did I just worm my way into your heart over the years?
Oh, you wormed your way in. I would say I am somewhat naturally organized.
Yeah.
But the journey to four kids and health issues derailed me. And by the time I was editing your podcast, and then in the couple of years after that, as my health declined, things got worse in our house, much more disorganized, chaotic. And there came a point around 2017 where things were pretty bad with my health and trying to juggle everything. So I didn't go looking for Organized 365 for the content. You worked your way in.
And I mean, you homeschool. So mm-hmm. even before the pandemic, you've always been a family where you all live, eat, play, and work together. So that's not unusual for you. But when
my husband didn't come home and start working remotely until 2018.
Okay.
So before that, this is our 11th year of homeschooling. Yeah. Before that, the kids and I were always together.
And when we met, you had three children. And your oldest was 7. So, I mean, three kids under 7, then you add another baby and you're homeschooling and you lived in California. So your house was not the size of like an Ohio house that has 6 family members in it.
Well, actually, we had just moved to California when I started working with you. And to make things more complicated, we were trying to sell a house in North Carolina. And we were living in a family member's house that had all of her furniture and belongings and things in it that we were trying to live and work around. We did that for 18 months.
So I feel like you've been in a couple of phases of life also, as we've known each other and you've gone through the podcast, because now your youngest is 5. Don't you notice like that is such a marked difference when your youngest is 5 is such a key year.
I'm just starting to see that phase.
Yeah, it's like you get some of your brain back because you're not just like, don't put that in your mouth. Okay, do they have to go to the bathroom? Okay, you just start to get just a little bit more mental independence from the constant vigilance that you've really been in for the last 14 years.
Mm-hmm. And I also turned 40 in the midst of that time.
Oh, yes.
And so I hit that weird transition where that year and a half or so as I was inching closer and closer to 40, where I was wanting to get rid of everything. And then I still had this little one who I had to deal with all of his extra things, all the stuff that babies and littles need along the way. But yeah, now we just turned 5. And so yeah, it's a different world. I'm starting to think more and more about all the little, you know, the board books and the baby stuff and how, you know, how much of that do I still need to keep?
Yes. You're really entering in my 40s. They have been fantastic. They've just been so fun and freeing. And I feel like I've had my brain back and been able to act in confidence that I didn't have in my 20s and 30s on some of my passions and ideas that I would have never tried in my 20s and 30s. But now I'm more confident in my decisions for my family and what's right for my family and just acting on those. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, 40, I think, was a big transition for me. Like I said, I think it started a little bit earlier for me. And I think part of that has to do, my mom passed away when she was just about to turn 38. So it was right about that time that I was starting to think about, oh my goodness, I'm approaching the age that my mom passed away. 40's right around the corner. What does this look like for me?
Wow. I'm sorry about that. That's really hard. Okay, so I wormed my way into your heart. And you're starting to, you know, think, okay, maybe this organization thing, maybe I should take a look at more than just the podcast here. What time of year was that? And what did you decide to do first when you decided, I think it was your bookshelves? Like, I remember when you did your bookshelves, I was like, oh, they have so many books. And all of your games and all. Do you remember that?
I do remember some of that. That was probably my first round of the 100 days. Mm-hmm. I DIY'd a lot to begin with. I mean, I heard all of the 40 weeks, one whole house podcasts. And, you know, I do a little bit here and there. But like I said, I was working around a family member's belongings for quite a while in that one phase. And then once we moved into a rental, we were in that house for, I think, about 4 years, maybe. That's when I was really able to start dealing with all of the things that we had moved from North Carolina and had been in boxes. But through that time, my health continued to decline. So I was at a point by the fall of 2017 where I was like 80% bedbound majority of the time. I mean, I was directing things from my bed. I didn't have many spoons to work with. And my family has food allergies and sensitivities and other things like that going on where I had to make all of our food from scratch and it was really time consuming. And so I was finding that my home environment was very chaotic and anxiety producing. Just, it wasn't bad. It wasn't dirty or, you know, anything like that. There was just a lot of stuff when you've got four boys and a husband and you're not able to go through those things often enough to purge them. Or you don't even know how to look at things in order to purge them, or you don't have the energy to purge them. It just gets to be visually overwhelming and overstimulating. And then there's that guilt that goes along with it as well when you're sick and you can't take care of all of those things, especially when you're sick and you don't look sick to other people. And so then there's an additional level of guilt and anxiety that's put on top of you above and beyond.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that you were not feeling well, and I knew you were doing the gluten-free and other food allergies thing. I knew you had the new baby. I knew you had the homeschooling, and just, I remember like getting glimpses of that and thinking, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I can do to help you. Like, first of all, I was very far away, so it wasn't like I could come over and like physically help you. I remember thinking, is there anything that I could even do to help? And when you think back on that time, because that's not where you are now, what are things people could have done that would have been helpful?
The first one is for people who have some of those more hidden illnesses. You know, for me, it's polycystic ovary syndrome, Hashimoto's, mast cell activation syndrome, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and other things like that, where they don't look sick, but yet they're always canceling appointments and activities and things like that, because you have to understand, and you've done a podcast on the idea of spoons. You only have so much energy, you know, to go around. And if you do one thing, it's going to be at the expense of something else. And if that's something that might be showering some days, honestly, there would be days if I took a shower, then I wasn't going to be able to do something else that morning. I'd have to wait until later in the day. So at that point, it probably would have been, you know, helping with food, helping with childcare, You know, all the practical things you would do for like a new mom or someone who has cancer or, you know, anything like that, anything that would be physical that I wouldn't have been able to get to would have been a huge help.
And I think because you're removed from it, I think it's a good conversation to have for other people to listen into. So do you, at that point, I think there's also like, in order to survive, you pretend it's not as bad as it is because what choice do you have? Like you have four children and your husband went to work and like, you just have to like fake it till you make it, you know, like it's like these little things are just going to have to get done. And then as the friend, you don't want to be like, oh, you're struggling. You're not doing very well. So I'm going to help you out because, you know, like you don't want to have that play into it. I mean, I there were a couple of things I tried to do during those times that I think helped a little bit, but you don't want to, you don't want people to realize how hard it really is for you. And at the same time, your friend doesn't really want to let you know that you're going down. Like we see you sinking, we see you drowning, like here's the lifeline. And then to be able to accept the help, like if they really do offer it, like you had so many food allergies that we just did, I think a Whole Foods gift card. Cause I was like, I don't even know, but you know what you need. So you get it. Now you could like, there are meal services and things. There weren't those things back then when we were doing that. Or like, I always did laundry for people. Like when my friends had babies, I would go and clean their house and do their laundry while they were in the hospital. And when they came home, their house was clean and their laundry was done. Like that was the thing that I did for friends.
That's an amazing gift.
But I'm in your laundry. I'm in your underwear. So really, like, I mean, all of these things are very intimate. Like when you're reaching out to somebody who doesn't feel well and knows they're not doing what they want to be doing as a housewife, as a mother, as a wife, as an employee, like all these things, does it feel like somebody's noticed that you aren't measuring up, or does it feel like somebody's helping? And is it just your mindset of which one it feels like?
I think it depends on your mindset, but I think it also depends on the way the person approaches you.
The delivery. Yeah. It's tricky, right?
It is.
It's hard. Because I feel like once you finally say, you know how you think you're getting sick, but you pretend you're not, because you're like, maybe no. And you try to take it out of your mind so that you don't feel as bad you are to get through whatever it is to get home to whatever. And then you're like, when you admit, okay, yeah, I'm sick, then all of a sudden you feel 10 times worse instantly. I'm kind of afraid of that too. Like if you don't feel well, and then I acknowledge that I'm going to help you because you don't feel well, then will you feel even worse because now somebody else has acknowledged that you feel bad?
I feel like when I slow down, like think about when you're in that school schedule and you hit Christmas break and you're like, oh, the stress is finally over. Exams are over. This or that with my kids is done. And then you're sick for the next 2 weeks through the beginning of the year. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. It is hard to offer help that is meaningful while maintaining independence and integrity. Like it's just a skill you have to develop over time, I think. But the older you get, the more you can recognize when some of your close friends could just use some help. And then I think it's also a skill to take it when you need it, like to accept the help when you need it.
Yep.
And not wait until it's so catastrophic that everybody knows you need help and like the whole caravan's coming in. Like if we could just use some of this extra time we're getting by being organized to kind of notice just little pick-me-ups that we can do with our friends when they're just having a down day or a down week. We don't have to wait until people are literally not able to get out of bed and care for their kids before we step in and help.
Yeah.
Is that when you decided to start getting organized? Was when you literally, you added that on?
Well, I was already doing a little bit at a time just because I knew I needed to. I knew I was heading towards different stages and preparing for things. And I'm a planner, so I didn't want to be behind on my stages at the same possible, but it sounds crazy. But I knew these things were coming and I knew I was getting sicker, but I also then was at a point where finally doctors were acknowledging what was going on and I finally had a diagnosis and I was finally at a point where I could do something more. And so that's when the opportunity for doing the 100 days became available. Then I jumped in with both feet and I was determined I was going to do it and I was going to do it right.
So Amanda is one of the like five people I can name that actually did all 100 days in 100 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Overachiever.
That's my middle name.
total overachiever. So what's the first time when you noticed that something was organized that wasn't organized before? Or like what was one of the things you noticed where you started to realize, okay, now we have a diagnosis, we're moving back into an organized phase. It may take a while, but we're moving that way.
It wasn't really obvious. It just kind of happened over time. One of the things that I probably noticed early on was when my kids caught on to the Sunday basket concept. And my oldest would go out and get the mail and he would bring it in and he put it straight into the basket. I didn't have to do anything with it. I didn't have to ask anything about it. It just appeared in my basket. When they ask for certain things for their birthday or for Christmas, put it on a wish list and stick it in the basket. Like they all knew where the basket was at and it wasn't on my kitchen counter.
That's okay. Where did you keep it?
I always felt like such a rebel because it was never on my kitchen counter. And I'm like, Lisa, it doesn't work in my family to put it on the kitchen counter.
Where did you keep it?
It was in my office bedroom.
Okay.
So my kids knew where it was at. My husband knew where it was at. It was accessible to where I worked and I processed things. But I do think that some of that has to do, I don't think that this episode has aired yet, but by the time my episode does, it probably will. Someone else talked about having moved it to their office during mm-hmm. the pandemic. And you talked about having moved yours back to the kitchen counter when you started going out of the house again.
Yep.
I think it's a similar situation because we are home-based.
Yeah.
I use that term loosely, but home-based regularly. We're homeschooling. We work from home. Even when we were in a house, that's the way our lives ran. And so it didn't work well to have it on the kitchen counter. It needed to be where we processed things.
Yes. And the reason I say kitchen counter, I'll just reiterate it if you didn't hear that podcast episode, is because pre-pandemic, we're all in and out of the house all of the time. And the kitchen is the one place that everyone goes. Like everyone goes in and out of the kitchen. And it's just very convenient to just drop the mail, drop anything you want in there, and piles naturally collect in the kitchen. If you work from home, if you homeschool, you might move it somewhere else because you actively use much more of your home on a regular basis. And walking into the office is not something that doesn't happen like 15 times a day. But if you're not schooling at home and you're not working at home, then you can literally be in your house and only be in your bedroom and in the kitchen and in the bathroom and not even use the other areas of your house during the week, especially if you have high school age kids. So that's why I say the kitchen counter. You obviously are able to move your Sunday basket. It is your home. You own it. You can do what you want. But yes, I did notice that during the pandemic, my Sunday basket went into my home office. And now that I'm working from the office, it's back in the kitchen. So just as long as you use it, if you don't put something in there and you notice that you're making a pile somewhere because the Sunday basket's not convenient, move the Sunday basket, don't move the pile. And then you'll be more successful with the system.
So it was my second round of the 100 days that I really noticed how much progress I had made because I didn't feel like I had really done much that first round. I made it through every day. I did something for every day, even if it was just simply talking to my husband about things that we needed to take care of in the garage, or I was making a plan of things that I would need to touch the next time. But I mean, I touched every single day and I did something to some extent, but I really did more physically in my house than I realized. And it was that second round when I noticed it.
Do you remember how much time you spent each day that first round?
Well, I'm an overachiever, so I know I spent more than 15 minutes most days, but I didn't do it every single day either. Sometimes I'd batch the weeks together on the weekend or on an evening or while the kids were doing school or just whenever I had the time, I would do multiple days worth of tasks all at once.
Okay. That's helpful too.
But I'm sure I spent more than 15 minutes a day on average.
And I do think, well, you have more than the average number of people, Amanda. More people helping to create more clutter. But I do think that you'd notice year two, like the second round. It's so hard to really realize the changes that you make as you're making them. Like you feel it when you take a bag of trash out or a bag to donations, but you don't really realize the lasting change that you're making until you go back round two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's happened since you started this journey of organization that you didn't expect to happen?
Well, my health dramatically improved. I had been working with a functional doctor on treatment, but I the 100 days really made a huge difference in my health as well. Getting all of the clutter out of my house, having things more organized, not having that anxiety producing visual stimulus, those all made such a huge difference in that first round on my health.
Wow. That is so awesome. You wouldn't think, because I mean, you're diagnosed with a medical condition. You wouldn't think that just changing your surroundings would have that much of an impact.
It does. Or it did for me, at least.
That's really cool. So have you experienced any unexpected events in this organizing journey, Amanda, of the full 7 years of the podcast?
Well, in 2019, we moved from a 1,550 square foot rental house into a 31 foot motorhome. And we started traveling full time with our four kids.
I so want to do that. My kids are now grown and I guess it's not too old for us to do that, but I just think that would be so cool. It'd be so fun.
I could never have done it without the 100 days because we purged everything. I think that was right around my fifth round, maybe. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there, my fifth or sixth round of the 100 days. And there's no way I could have gone through everything that had been there six rounds prior to go from 1,500 square feet to 31 feet. We got rid of everything that did not fit either into the RV itself, our minivan, and one of those little U-Haul pods.
Amazing. So, because this just fascinates me. It just totally fascinates me. What are some things that you thought would be really hard living in an RV that turned out not to be as hard as you thought? And then conversely, what are things that you thought, oh, that wouldn't be such a big deal? And you're like, oh, I really missed that about living in a house.
Things that I thought I would miss on one hand is space. And on the other hand, things that I do miss are space. It's one of those, you know, catch-22 type of situations. There's less space to clean, less space to keep up with, less space to keep things. But when there's six of us, yeah. I kind of wish we had just a tiny bit more space because we do live in a motor home and not in like a fifth wheel or something like that, that seems a little bit more homey. I do miss a little bit of that, but we're making some changes in our motor home to try and make it feel more homey. Like we changed out the couch and we're hoping to maybe paint at some point and some little things like that. So at times it doesn't feel like much of a home. It definitely feels like we're living in a motor home and we're tripping over each other at times, but not having to keep up with the larger space is such a time saver.
Yeah. Do you know how long you'll be living this lifestyle? Or are you just going as long as it?
As long as God tells us to go. We have no idea.
That is so cool. I want to have an RV or motorhome or whatever it is and just travel the United States and meet people and hug people and do events. Like if I could write my future, that is what I would do. I don't know if it would work for my husband and all that, but I just think that would be so fun. So, so fun. What do you think you have more of now?
Definitely health. We already talked about that.
Yes. I'm so excited for you, Amanda. That is so awesome.
Freedom. And to go with that, traveling. We never were able to travel before because of finances and commitments and responsibilities. Now we can go wherever we want and do whatever we want and still make money and feed our kids and things like that. I have more confidence. I'm not as self-conscious about the way my spaces look or the way I look personally, physically. Business growth. My business has taken off in the last year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, I've noticed that you've definitely gained more confidence. I love it. And you know, if I'm doing like almost five podcast episodes a week, so I don't know, maybe you guys can move into a fifth wheel if I just keep talking, do more and more podcast episodes. You want to do a satellite radio show? Maybe we can move this into like a satellite radio show.
Let's go.
What do you have less of?
Guilt, frustration, anxiety, especially that stuff anxiety. Like I said, it really does affect you physically. At least it does me. weight. I did lose body weight, but of course we lost a lot of stuff weight. because I can tell you exactly how much our motorhome weighs because we have to weigh it periodically to make sure that we're not overweight for the axles.
Oh.
So our whole motorhome weighs roughly 18,000 pounds and we have about 2,100 pounds of cargo weight space. And I think we had about 40 pounds of margin last time we weighed.
Oh, geez. How much of that can you shove in the minivan?
I already have a kid in here, so not much more.
Oh my goodness gracious. What do you wish you'd known sooner?
That less stuff would make life feel lighter and more agile. That things sitting on a shelf or in the closet or wherever it might be, you know, it might not seem like it's a big deal, but it really does take up mental space and it takes up my time looking for things, moving things around, maintaining them. And that organization doesn't mean Pinterest perfect.
Yeah, I felt so nervous saying that the first time, you know, like, to say that I'm not a Pinterest perfect organizer, that I'm a functional organizer, even though I want it to look pretty. Like I want it to look like a magazine. Like I watch a lot of TV. I get what the perfect looks like. It's just not attainable for me. And it gave me migraines to try to figure it out and I couldn't afford it. And even if you do get it looking that way, like you can't find anything and your family ruins it within 5 seconds. So what was the point? Like it's totally, I was like, all right, well, this is reality. Like real life is not Pinterest perfect. Like in real life, when you see everybody smiling the photo, you don't hear the arguments before that. I was like, put that down. No, you can't touch him. Would you still?
Especially when you have four boys.
Yeah. Picture looks great. No. Get in the car. And it's just a snapshot. Like Pinterest is just a snapshot in time and you can achieve snapshots in time. You just can't live in a picture. You live mm-hmm. in a movie. Yeah. What's your next step now?
My binders need a little bit more attention. They're set up basically, but I don't really have all the pages filled out. So I could use a little bit more attention there. But after all the podcasts and All Access, I still struggled with my binders. It was the paper solution that really helped the binders start making sense for me. Even though I had listened to all of that, I had been in the Facebook groups. It was seeing that information or reading that information in a different format that really helped mm-hmm. it click last summer.
Some things you need to watch in video, some things auditory, some things books. That's why we provide all these different resources because everyone learns and absorbs that information differently. Mm-hmm. And having a book editor put it all in order and make it all make sense and have all those people read it before you guys read it, that was very helpful as well. Because, you know, these podcasts mostly are just recorded conversations off the cuff and we just go off script all the time. It's a great conversation, but it's not a edited manuscript that's been professionally produced. And so I think the paper solution gave a lot of that to people who are just trying to learn it step by step.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
Before we end, Amanda, since you are my podcast editor and you edit lots of podcasts, I'm sure people have questions about that. What are the best practices that you've seen of podcasts? Just in general, what would you say about podcasts that are successful, audio that is good, systems that work, things to do, not to do, things we've done on the Organized 365 podcast that have worked?
Wow, that's a big topic.
I know. She's like, there are no notes ahead of time for this, Lisa.
This was not asked ahead of time. I wish all of my clients had a workbox because I think it would help them to plan ahead and batch better. I think that they would see more growth in their business if they had a system like that to follow. Too many of my clients are just winging it and trying to stay on schedule. And that's really difficult. I mean, I personally, since I started using the workbox system, have seen my business double.
Oh, I like that. I think we should have that on the website somewhere.
But
explain
otherwise,
that. How did the work? I mean, you're very organized, Amanda. How did the workbox help your business double?
Well, you have to understand that with living in such a small space, having mm-hmm. to be conscious of weight, so every piece of paper has to earn its spot in the RV. I don't use the workbox maybe quite like it's designed. I do more digital, But the fact that the slash pockets are there in my portable Sunday basket, and I have this framework from the entrepreneur playbook to go from, like, I noticed places that I was completely failing in my business, places that I didn't know to take care of because I had never been taught business. I mean, my degrees are in Bible and Old Testament studies. My BA is in Bible. My MA is in Old Testament studies. So I never learned those kinds of things. The tech stuff came naturally to me along the way, and that's how I ended up where I am. But I never understood the business side of things, the marketing, the financial side of things. And when you start thinking in terms of the pink, purple, blue, and green slash pockets, even if you're not putting every paper in there and you've got some kind of a hybrid system, there's just something about going through that process that helps you see where the holes are at in your business.
Yeah, because nobody does all four areas of a business naturally. You do one, maybe two naturally, and then you remember finance. But there's usually one that you just, it just slips your mind because it's not the way you think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have undertaken a really big project in taking out all of the outros of the entire podcast over the last couple of months. And there have been numerous times, I know Emily did it, and then Emily Milana did it, where we've gone back through old podcast episodes and edited them. Like you mentioned the 40 weeks, one whole house. So before there was a 100-day program, there was that. Well, now if you come into the podcast and you hear that, like then you like Google that and you're searching for it and you're asking customer service, it doesn't exist anymore. So we've scrubbed that as much as we can from all of the old podcast episodes, which we do not have transcriptions of. So we have to listen to them. You have to go in, you have to edit them. And then we changed out the outros, which is like the ad that I add at the end or the beginning of a podcast. And those get outdated faster than the actual content of the podcast gets outdated. And now that we have four, sometimes five episodes a week, which is a lot of podcast episodes, Amanda, don't you think?
It is.
And we keep up with it. And we have never missed a Friday. Like we work ahead. Sometimes I'm a little right down to the wire. I try not to do that to you. Over 7 years, I only think I've done it a handful of times. But we don't miss a Friday. Like I love to be consistent. Like you want to listen to a podcast episode? I'm going to put one out. I'm going to figure out how to get a podcast episode out. But we took all of the intros and outros off of those podcasts. So now you can start with whatever episode is number one in the player and listen all the way through. And it's really like a journal. It's like a free Audible book without any ads of what Organize 365 was doing at that time in history or what they were promoting at that time in history. It was a big project. It has cost a lot of money and a lot of time to do it. I have this feeling that other podcasters are going to do what I've done. I don't know if other podcasters have. I've never seen anybody do it. I've seen a lot of podcasters going into their old podcasts that are popular and adding current ads. So you could be listening to something that's 5 years old, but you're hearing about like a promotion they're doing right now. And I thought about that. And I thought, you know, I mean, that's a lot of work too.
It is.
I just thought, you know, a podcast is like an ever-ending Audible book that you could just listen to. And then when you get to the current, and I've wormed my way into your heart. And then you're like, all right, what's she doing now? What's the crazy thing Lisa's doing now? And so we do coffee chats, which I love. Mm-hmm. And when the coffee is cold, then we just delete that. And then it alleviates the questions in customer service. It alleviates you having to go back and re-edit podcasts. I'm much more conscious now in my Friday podcast that I don't say anything that has a price in it or that is time specific, even though it's going to come out in a timely manner. I say, you know, like in the spring of 2021, instead of this weekend, we're going to do this. So that's kind of like a framework. So I wonder if other podcasters like me who never plan on stopping podcasting will move to something like that.
Maybe. What I like about it is that if someone really connects with you and your brand, they're going to go to those other podcasts. They're going to want to hear what's going on.
The coffee chat?
Yeah, they're a part of your brand. They're a part of your business. They're a part of your life. So they want to know everything that's going on. And so even though they have to jump over to another episode to hear the current information and the promotions, they're invested already. So they want to hear that stuff.
And then I feel like, well, you know, I'm going to sell you in this podcast. You know, I'm telling you whatever crazy thing I'm doing right now that's probably going to end up in a product. Then you're like, darn it, I have to get a custom candle now. Like, you know that. I haven't like had you listen to this free content and then at the end, I'm trying to sell you something. Like, it's just so much more aligned with how I want to teach. Like, if you don't want to hear or you can't afford whatever it is that I'm coming out with, then skip over the coffee chats and you can just enjoy all the free content and get a deeper relationship with me without listening to those. And then if you want to know, it's kind of like watching me Instagram stories, like the behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like it's a more authentic experience to what I'm trying to create, but it would be really interesting to see if any other podcasters do it.
I think the other thing that makes it work for Organize 365 is that you don't want to sell a program to someone who's not going to take the program, who's mm-hmm. not going to finish the program. So you don't want to sell the 100 days program to someone if they're not going to go through it and they're not going to organize their home. So yeah. you have to explain to them why they need that information. You have to set the foundation for that before you can sell anything to them. And so that's why this works for you.
And we don't have advertisers on the podcast. Like, I mean, people are reaching out to us all the time to advertise on the podcast, but we don't have ads. So I don't have to worry about that. That's, I wasn't as successful with it with the blogger. So I decided not to do it in the podcast either. And so it kind of makes it simpler. Like I could do anything I want and I choose mm-hmm. not to have any, not even my own ads in there anymore. So it's different. Big project you got to do this winter. Did you ever think that I'd be doing 5 podcast episodes a week?
I think maybe I did.
Really?
Well, we've gone up and down over time, but yeah, I think I had a feeling at some point you'd get close to it.
But they're all different. So really, my big thing is if you take all 5 of these segments, it's a great syndicated radio show. Do you think we'll ever get there, Amanda?
I have little doubt that if you really want to do it, we're going there.
We'll see. We'll see. I like the on-demandness of the podcast, like that you can search it, you can go back, you can pause it. That's why I love Voxer, like the Voxer mm-hmm. app, Voxer. It's like on-demand phone calls with texting and video and all that. I love that as well. Well, Amanda, everyone has wanted to hear from you. Are you taking new podcast clients now?
I am.
Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. It's thepelsersmedia.com. So the P-E-L-S-E-R media, M-E-D-I-A.com.
Amanda is great. She's fantastic. Really, really good. You have to get your episodes in on time, though. You cannot stress her out. If you stress her out, I'm going to call you. Because you really have grown your business quite a bit since we started.
A lot since we started.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really fun. Like you are so easy to work with, so professional. You give me great feedback. You also did the audiobooks for The Mindset of Organization and How ADHD Affects Home Organization. Audiobooks are much more time intensive to record. Costs a lot more than a podcast, just FYI, in case you want to do that. So Amanda, before you leave, what advice would you give to someone who is just starting out in their organizing?
If you've been listening to Lisa for any period of time and you've been trying to DIY it, if you're really serious about moving forward, just jump in, start with the Sunday basket, 100 days, all access, however far you can jump to start with, because everything is set up in a way that it's going to multiply your progress. And I am living proof of that.
Amanda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much for editing every single episode that everyone is ever listening to. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Are you ready to share your transformational story with me and the rest of the Organize 365 community? We would love to hear it. Please go to organize365.com/Wednesday and fill out an application. I cannot wait to see your application in my email inbox.